Attention FM DJs in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep begins now.
It's 2 minutes and 3 seconds after the hour of 12 in this, the month of May, in the year of our Lord, 2006. Thank you for coming along, making a part of your listening day, live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of AM 970 Solid State Radio. This, my friends, is the Rick Emerson Show. And thank you for coming along. 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. RickEmerson.com. Here's the really alarming thing about your caffeine intake. It's not really that you drink so much of the caffeinated water. It's that you drink so much of it in such a short period of time. And that you don't drink any other fluids on top of it.
I find it to be hydrating and caffeinated.
Okay.
Oh, it's really good.
Okay.
It does its job.
Here's the thing, though. Because caffeine is what we call a diuretic. Or a whizinator. And so, my whole thing is, if you are, if you're just drinking nothing but caffeinated beverages, doesn't that mean eventually you just turn to dust? Isn't that sort of one of the things where you're now putting out more liquids than you're taking in, and so eventually you're just going to crumble into little pieces in front of me?
Well, I'll have a couple of caffeinated waters, and then I'll put real water in it.
I see. So you've got a whole formula.
Yes.
Okay. It's 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. Today's one of those days where I can't tell if it's really hot in here or if I'm just suffering from some sort of jungle fever. All right. Because I'm all sweaty and blotchy and sticky and bad. But, you know, sometimes I just like that. So sometimes I'm just malfunctioning. So I don't know. All right, here's what's coming up today. Peter Carlin, TV critic for the Oregonian, is going to be here later. We're going to talk about The Sopranos. Who watched The Sopranos last night? By which I mean Sarah. Oh, were you...
No, I'm watching it tonight.
Oh, well, that's not my fault. We're going to have to... You'll have to shield your ears or go into the cone of silence or something.
And I knew it the second that fell through. I knew I missed a good one.
Oh. Well, I still hold to my contention that this has been a weak season overall, but last night was... There was some... Crap went down last night. Oh, yeah. Anyway, so we'll talk Sopranos. We got the top five, which is now... It's already outdated because it's in the top five from 26 years ago, but we were supposed to have done it last Thursday, and then Thursday became Friday, and then Friday became today. And so we're going to do it today. Top five songs from May 18th, 1980. It was supposed to be a whole Mount St. Helens thing, and I've already prepared it, so I'm not going to let that work go to waste. Doesn't matter. It's not like I'm going to do it and then throw it away. We'll do that today. Top five songs from this week, sort of. In 1980, whatever. Clyde Lewis is going to be in the house today. Clyde Lewis.
Physically.
Yeah, he will be here in the 1 o'clock hour. Because he does that thing at Dante's, and I guess the History Channel or somebody, they're going to be out there filming it. The History Channel's going to be doing a whole thing on Clyde at Dante's tonight. So he'll be here in the studio later on. Plus, we've got horrible news to get to today. Right here. I hold it in my hands. Listen to this. Left onlooker splattered in blood. One witness said, there was just blood everywhere. I couldn't believe it. Also, this phrase. Completely severed is the only word to use. So there you go. We'll get to that later on. It's 503-733-2970. You can also email it to rick@rickemerson.com. Lisa Goddard's going to be here to talk about it. Is that guy that was he a senator or something? Who is that guy? He got caught taking a big handful of, he's a congressman. And he got caught, like, on camera, literally taking, like, $10,000 in cash. Like, full-on, just a television graft style, where the guy's, like, literally handing him a paper bag full of money. We got that, and Ed McCarthy will give what I promised is the final Da Vinci Code story. We'll talk about Idiot's lineup around the block to see what is, by all accounts, a tepid and uninteresting film. We're here as are we always, with the lovely Sarah X. Dillon. How are you?
Hello.
So, you're wearing a turtleneck sweater.
I know it's the first time I haven't ridden my bike to work in like a month.
Here's the thing. It's really hot in here.
I know. And I can't take it off.
You should take your sweater off. But I mean, here's the thing. You got to know. I wish we had a thermometer in here. So we can find out exactly how hot it is. Because I find it curious. Tim is wearing a summer ensemble, light-colored. I myself am wearing a sort of T-shirt kind of a thing. Yet you have a thick turtleneck sweater that is black all the way up to your neck. Now, my question for you, Sarah, is why don't you take that sweater off and just wear your T-shirt? Because it is so warm in here.
Because this shirt I'm wearing is not work-friendly. I didn't really think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's my loving the FCC shirt.
Yeah. All right, so there you go.
Blah, blah, blah.
I don't talk about the rain. It's just pointless, except to say...
Well, it's good for the garden, isn't it?
It's like some sort of a plot. Because, like yesterday especially, where I was coming home, I was out for lunch yesterday, and then I come home. As I'm on the way home, sun baking, sky blue, birds chirping, cats playing with balls of yarn. It's a fantastic... So I'm thinking, this is it. It's going to be a fantastic... I'm going to bicycle everywhere. It's going to be the brand new Fit Me. Get on the bicycle, come to work. Man, as soon as I go to leave, and then it's like the thunder and the lightning, and the toads falling from the heavens. This morning I leave the house, and man, it just starts again. It's the whole bad scene. So I end up taking the bus today. So I do that split the difference thing where I'm taking the bus, so I still feel like a loser, yet I'm toting the bike along with me. So I'm a loser that's like, yeah, I gotta carry this big piece of metal along with me. Still standing in the rain waiting for the bus to arrive. My hair is still plastered to my face. I'm all blotchy and hideous looking. It's just the worst thing ever.
Sometimes you make it too hard for yourself. You should either just commit to taking the bus or commit to
running. Yeah, but I overslept. And plus, if you take the bus here, it's not so much taking the bus here that I'm buying. It's taking the bus home.
Well, you know that it's going to be raining all day.
Yeah, but I brought my rain. See, I don't mind bicycling home if I got my rain stuff. I overslept and I couldn't bicycle in this morning. And it's just the bicycling home in the afternoon is the worst thing ever, especially on a day like today because it's hot. And the bus, look, let's call it what it is. The bus smells under the best of circumstances, and the people on there are no treat either. It's like it's not like the people who ride the bus reek of daisies. You know what I mean? They no way. And I'm always sitting in the back between two guys, both of them fat, one of them wearing a handcuff that's been welded off, passing a paper bag back and forth and stinking like month-old cheese in a greenhouse. And then there's me right between them. You know, when you get home and you can never wash that away. That smell stays in your nostrils forever. Here's Tim Riley working on the following stories for you today.
Ignore the bad polls about Iraq. They're not true, cautions Donald Rumsfeld. Millions defy their churches' order to boycott the Da Vinci Code, giving Hollywood its biggest opening of the year thus far. Bear meat donations are no longer welcome at an Alaska homeless shelter. And Tommy Hilfiger slapped me, sobs Axl Rose.
What kind of a man are you being slapped around by Tommy Hilfiger? Whatever. So that's all coming up, plus blah-da-da-blah-da-da-blah. And some other stuff. Here's Tim Riley at the City Desk.
It's time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour. And now, from the City Desk, Tim Riley.
From high atop the bottom of the coin tower in downtown Portland, Oregon, CBS presents the City Desk News Beat. Tim Riley reporting, yes, a Trojan nuclear power cooling tower is no more. After months of anticipation and preparation, 2,800 pounds of explosives were used, and the 499 tower was imploded in seconds. With security in place along the Columbia, and news crews from throughout the world, they blew the darn thing up. It was picture perfect.
Did anybody end up going? I did not. At the last minute, and this is on, because it happened Sunday morning, on Saturday afternoon, I had a guy email me, a couple people that said, because we've had this whole mystery last week about press passes and where you get a press pass.
There's no such thing.
That's what we found out. I don't know if we had this conversation on the air. Probably not. We were having this whole talk about press passes and of how you need one to get to the viewing place. And I was like, well, where do you get a press pass? Because we all had the same image in our head, which is the 1950s reporter with the press pass stuck in the brim of his fedora on his way to interview Clark Kent about something or whatever. But then Dean was here. Dean, the camera guy from Coin 6, was here, and didn't he reveal that all you have to do is just, like, make one yourself with a home laminate? And attention, people, everybody out there who wants access to something that's high security. Apparently, all you have to do is just take a picture, and it's just, like, your name, and sign it, and, like, stick it all together, and go to a Kinko's and spend $2 to laminate it, and you can get into anywhere. Mm-hmm. So the idea that there is some sort of a press pass that is put out by a press pass office is, I guess, a fiction that is perpetrated by an elite and liberal media that wishes to exclude you, the mainstream common clay of the New West, from observing the news firsthand. So I guess you can just make it up. But I did not, is my point. And so I did not go see the thing. And then I woke up too late this morning to watch it anyway.
I woke up
and the corns of my feet hurt.
Okay.
I woke up on Sunday morning. It was so depressing because I left my TV on when I'd gone to bed the night before.
Did you TiVo it even?
No.
Well, you work at a news place. You didn't get to watch it this morning?
I couldn't watch it. It actually made me sad.
Oh, you actually just couldn't. Like, I couldn't watch.
No, I accidentally saw it on Sunday morning when I was getting up to
go
get a glass
you?
Of water. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Well,
it's just, why do they have to blow it up?
Well,
I still don't understand
that. That's the American way.
Because that's, well...
We were going to invade Iran, but we decided to do something else.
Well, we had all these explosives, and so why not? I don't know. I don't know if it was a question of, like, upkeep, if it's just a question of, like, they got to pay some guy to come and give it a good scrubbing every now and again, and they figured...
Maybe they got to build a new casino there.
I guess the whole... Well, see, that would be fine. I guess the American default setting is to blow something up. You know what I mean? Like, If you're not going to do anything with it, if it's just sitting there, you're not actively using it, you might as well explode it. That is what boys do growing up with all of their action figures, Legos, and Transformers. And so now it is true with the Trojan. I never get tired, by the way, though, of using the phrase Trojan implosion, which, there you go. It's a news chyren that creates itself. Do we have any sound or anything on that?
No, but if you want to watch a video, it's on my website.
Oh, so go to timrileymedia.com, and you can see the... And by the way, not to be...
Nothing. I mean, there's nothing to hear except ba-boom and for half a second, and then that's it.
Not to be overly sticklerian about this, but I do believe it's not technically an implosion. Because it didn't look like it was being sucked inward. Do you know what I mean? When it's an implosion, it actually... You know who I sound like right now is Bruce Agler. When it's an implosion, all I need to do...
Hey, you sound like Ben Wattenberg.
Ben Wattenberg, yeah, look at you. Represent. Yeah, Ben Wattenberg. Ben Wattenberg is that's a little shop talk there. He's a radio host in San Francisco.
He's a genius.
On, what is it, HNKGO?
KGO. But you can't get it here because of some stupid station on 800 in Tiger.
Station no one listens to. What was my point? Ben Wattenberg is the greatest, though. He's like the Cecil Adams of the airwaves. And he answers just the greatest science questions, such as the classic Ben Wattenberg question is, do I weigh less if I stand on my head? The answer is yes, by the way. But I believe when there's an implosion, it creates a vacuum inside, and then everything is sort of sucked in. But this just looked like they knocked it down. I think it was not quite an implosion.
I think this is a discussion for you and Clyde Lewis during the 1 o'clock hour. I'm sure he can shed some light on this.
Well then, moving on, here's Tim Riley.
Do we open up the Battle Watch yet? Because that's what we have intended to do.
No, we're good. There we go. There's the Battle Watch for Monday.
I want you to remember that no bastard ever won war by dying for his country. He won it by making the other poor dumb bastard die for his country.
Condoleezza Rice. On NBC's Meet the Press, points out that Iraq has made a remarkable transformation from a dictatorship to a democracy.
And that's why the creation of this new government of national unity that has such great focus and that is already beginning to work on behalf of the Iraqi people is so important.
They now accept applications to fill numerous government positions now open and opening daily.
Maliki was very focused on the need, particularly to have an interior ministry in which people had confidence and the Kabul police in which people had confidence. And so I'm not surprised that it's taking them a little bit longer to make sure that these are people in whom the prime minister has confidence.
You know, is it Condoleezza Rice occasionally has a weird accent? It kind of comes and goes. It's not always there. It was so, like that first clip.
It could be because she travels so much.
Well, she does that Madonna thing where it kind of sort of slips in and out and you're not really sure.
And that's why the creation of this new government of national unity.
It's like it wants to be British sometimes, but then it just slips back into being her.
Already beginning to work on behalf of the Iraqi people is so important.
It is, by the way, indicative, I think, more than anything else of the Iraqi situation, that we're not even listening to the actual... Like, we just assume that there is no caloric content to these clips whatsoever. That there's
or no truth whatsoever.
There's no
we're
point.
Just sitting here playing lies. And we know it.
We really should just do a propaganda watch. That, note to self. Okay.
It's a tough job trying to find truthful news each and every day, so we just play whatever's there. We do whatever everybody else does.
All right. Do we have anything we can give away in exchange for, well, whatever. We need a propaganda watch. And here's the only stipulation. If somebody out there wants to crank together a propaganda watch, you'd be my best friend for life. You kind of hear other watches go on the show. The only request I make is that it involves some sort of Soviet music in the background. As far as sound clips or sound effects or whatever, I don't care. It doesn't matter. The Geek Watch, I think, is the gold standard still to us. And I didn't create that. It's like the only one I didn't make. And it's the best. The Geek Watch, which maybe we'll get to later. That is the best of all watch themes, I believe, on the show.
And Tim's Monkey Watch.
The Monkey Watch theme is pretty good, too, in its simplicity. It has a sort of straight-to-the-point, sort of crystalline kind of greatness. But the Geek Watch is probably, in terms of pure montage, is the best. My point is, we need a propaganda watch. So you got a little Soviet music, a little whatever, a little what have you, a little whatnot. You put it together, you send it on in.
Oh, speaking of that, there's a brand new special on Goebbels on tonight.
On GoBots?
Goebbels?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Hitler's propaganda.
Oh, yeah. I told Susan Reynolds in marketing that she ought to get the Ministry of Information or propaganda, whatever.
It's on tonight at 9 on PBS.
Yeah, well, it's, at any given, the odds are like 1 in 2 at any given time. You flip around, you land on something. That I did the other day, literally, I very rarely channel surf because I got the TiVo.
Yeah.
And so, but something happened. I forget what it was. It was like, the problem is that Laura watches much more television than I do. And so, like, she will take over the TiVo sometimes, and it's like, I'll go to watch something, and all of my stuff has been bumped off by, like, endless episodes of What Not to Wear and Top Chef. And so it's like, I'm like, well, for the first time in, like, eons, there's nothing to watch. And so I do that thing that so rarely a TiVo user does, which I just flip on, and I start surfing around. And it happened to be on the History Channel, so it was taping something or something, whatever. And it comes on, and I swear to God, what do I see? Just a huge, gigantic swastika made out of Nazis marching in a circle carrying torches. It's just like randomly on the History Channel. That's what it is.
Is that the American version of What Not to Wear or the British version?
The American.
Because the guy version. There looks like Scott Daly.
On the American version?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That show makes me feel a lot better about myself. I'm no fashion plate or nothing, but I...
The British version's funny with the two chicks on it.
It's that and Top Chef, and then that horrible... God damn, you'll know what this is, Sarah. What is that horrible, that Sweet 16 show?
Oh,
on
my,
MTV?
My Super Sweet
my 16. Super Sweet 16? Mm-hmm. Boy, you want to talk about some people that should just have a hatchet taken to them.
Yeah.
What are your favorite Lifetime programs?
That'd be a question for Sarah Dillon, by the way. I don't... I like anything with Deidre Hall, though.
Getting back to the original Battle Watch... Donald Rump, back to more truthful news now.
We should seriously. How great would this be if we just had a whole lot of I can't sing Russian marching music for you, but you know what I mean, just playing underneath. All right.
Growing public disenchantment over Iraq. Aha. Snickers, Donald Rumsfeld, please dismiss those public polls.
In the last analysis, the American people have a darn good gyroscope, an inner gyroscope that kind of keeps coming back to center. It may get off tilt for a while, but it'll come back. I've got a lot of confidence in the American people.
To do what exactly? I don't understand. He's got confidence in us to what? To pay no attention to the mammy on the curtain?
To do better public polling. Meanwhile, British Prime Minister Tony Blair says this has been a long 3 weeks.
3 years of struggle to try to get to this point, and it has been longer and harder than any of us would have wanted it to be. But this is a new beginning.
All right.
Meanwhile, potential bad guys. Remember, we talked about this story last week. A copy of a bill obtained by Reuters contains no references about the Iranians making Catholics and Jews wear special clothing. Apparently, this is part of a dress code that they're talking about in Parliament. So we had a story on this.
So the story is true or not true?
It is false. Untrue.
All right.
It was put out by Canada's National Post and picked up by everyone. So
all right, okay.
That's not happening. And that for now, ladies and gentlemen, is our truthful news on the Battle Watch.
All right, there you go.
Americans play to win all the time. Americans love America. We have the best spirit and the best men in the world. That's why Americans have never lost and will never lose a war.
The Da Vinci Code's worldwide opening is posting record numbers with an estimated $224 million worldwide. Columbia Pictures said the film is now the second biggest debut ever at the global box office. I don't know how they figured that out.
Yeah, it's made up.
But here it was only like 15.
No, it's completely made up. And here's the other thing. You know what it is? It's like when they say that a billion people watch the Oscars every year. That's made up. It's completely fabricated.
So now we're lying about movies, not just politics.
We should just do all propaganda all day. That's what we're going to do. No,
we read whatever they put in front of us. We never check to see if this stuff is true.
We just don't
have time.
I read this whole thing the other day, whenever the last Oscars were, I guess, back in February or January, whatever. But it was this whole article about how that billion person figure is just made up because they have no way to track it. Because only a couple of the countries, you know, really the big, you know, like us, and then there's some countries in Europe and that have any kind of a rating. I think people in Swaziland have a people meter on their television.
How many illegal aliens went to see it out of the 11 billion?
The illegal aliens and homeless people. So there you go. So it's a bunch of crap. It's all made up.
Well, Tom Hanks, I was going to call him Tom Cruise, but he's actually Tom Hanks in this. He says, I told you so.
It is a fabulous scavenger hunt. About very powerful stuff.
He
and
sounds
that combination
sounds
is
jazzed
really irresistible.
About.
And now the United States and Canada totals added together are $77 million.
That's not
that doesn't
that
include
impressive.
$253 million from around the world.
Whatever. And people in other countries don't have any taste anyway. You can't use them as any yardstick for anything. Apparently, it outgrows that. What is it? That Life is Beautiful. The Robert Benigni.
I thought that thing was around forever.
So I was watching the. And I don't even care about the movie, but I sat all weekend on another Drudge Report and just endlessly refreshing to see what the box office totals were. Mm. I was just hoping that it would bomb. I was just hoping that it would be a huge failure so we could mock it. What are you going to do, though? I mean, you knew it was just going to be... I mean, people, you know, they got something to watch between trips to Walmart. So, you know, there you go. All right. Do we have to break here?
Yeah.
All right. Coming up, Lisa Goddard's going to talk about graft, corruption, bribery, scandal. Later on, Ed McCarthy, for whom we have a new theme, by the way. We finally have a theme for Ed McCarthy. He'll be talking with us about the adventure going. And about Jimmy Hoffa, though. That's the other thing. About the quest for Jimmy Hoffa's bones. Later on, Clyde...
I've got to do it.
You taking off...
I've got to do
you
it.
You taking
it's
off your sweater?
Hot in here, yeah.
Yeah. All right. I have no idea what we're talking about. Oh, yeah, Clyde Lewis will be here. And
you know,
later
someone
on...
someone wasn't listening earlier. That sounded so wrong.
It's hot. I got to take off my sweater. Peter Carlin, Sopranos recap. Oh, don't go anywhere. It's a Rick Emerson show. You stay there. This is that bed again that gives me vertigo. I feel like I gotta grab into a guardrail in this place. Hey, it's the Rick Emerson Show live from Portland. Thank you for coming by. It's 503-733-2970. You know, here's the thing about the heat and the humidity. It's actually so much of both in here that it's difficult to breathe.
You seem like you're having a minor panic attack.
I'm not having a panic attack. I'm just saying the air is sort of thick in here. Would you agree the air is thick and soup-like?
Yeah, it's really warm. It's like uncomfortably warm.
All right. Okay. It's 503-733-2970, or you can email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. Subject under this email is, give Tim a hug. She then continues, am I crazy or does Tim sound irritable today?
He does.
I do?
I'm just reading the email. I'm not passing any judgment, of course, because that would be wrong. She...
Well, after Friday, can you blame him? We were ridiculous.
In what way? How?
Tim was just trying to be an upstanding newsman, and you and I were just spastic.
When? Friday?
Yeah.
What was Friday about? Oh, we were playing that... You have no idea, by the way, how many emails I got from people that were tortured their friends with that song this weekend, over this past weekend.
Poor Tim, he was so excited about being back on the air, and we're just ruining it for him.
Guy sent me a whole webpage full of remixes of that. House mix, techno mix, 12-inch mix. Are you bugging Tim? Give him a hug and tell him how wonderful he is.
That would bug Tim.
That would not make the situation better, FYI. If Tim Riley isn't happy, she says, no one should be happy. All right, so there you go.
All right, I'm going to try to be happier starting right now.
Now, are you...
I'm not in a bad mood.
I didn't think so.
By any stretch of the imagination.
I think the listener is projecting.
I think so.
Okay,
503... I'm enjoying life to its fullest. Treasuring every moment.
733... 70. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show, live from the Hill in Washington, D.C., CNN radio correspondent and woman about town, Lisa Goddard. How are you, Lisa?
Hello, I'm doing good. How are you, Rick? You're not in a bad mood, are you?
I'm not. I'm feeling perfectly peachy. I'm just...
Peachy.
There does seem... I'm what?
I like peachy.
I am peachy. I... There is, the air in the studio is a little sticky today. I don't know why. There's some sort of, I'm not going to go on about the weather. I'm just going to say that in Portland, as you know, it rains quite a lot. And then there's this weird heat wave, and then I believe that the climate control of the studio is broken somehow. And so we are effectively, it is, as they say on the East Coast, we are having a schwitz here. We really, it's like being at one of those Turkish baths or something while we're doing the show. So
that's an image.
It's okay. It's not really, it's nothing you need to trouble yourself with. Hey, let's talk about this because it contains graft, corruption, bribery, scandal. Tell me about this guy in Louisiana. They found, is this right? Am I reading this right? $90,000 in cash in this guy's house?
Yes, that's right. And not just in any house, in his house in Washington. This is the congressional representative who represents New Orleans. And the FBI says in a search last year, they're just releasing the affidavit now, in a search last year, they found some $90,000 wrapped in various plastic containers, some in freezer wrap, in various places in Congressman Jefferson's freezer. And they say that that is part of the same money that he was given by an FBI informant who was trying to prove that he was accepting bribes. The congressman, just in the last half hour, arrived at National Airport and told reporters that there are two sides of this story. This is all just the FBI is really trying to make him look bad. He's got a news conference scheduled for just about an hour from now.
Now, is this the same guy? Because I, like most people in the media, I am exceptionally lazy, and so I get a vast amount of my news from the Drudge Report. Is this the guy? They literally have him on film. But like an FBI, an undercover guy, handing him like $10,000 in cash. And he literally is on camera, like, taking it and shoving it in his pocket.
There have been those reports. The FBI themselves has not confirmed that tape, to my knowledge. But this is Representative William Jefferson. This is a Democrat from Louisiana. He's a tallish African-American man. And he kind of, with a receding hairline, you've probably seen him on the news, saying that he is innocent. Now, two people have pled guilty in this case. One of them is one of his former aides who says, no, the congressman was trying to get bribes. And it has to do with especially some different businesses trying to get work in Africa and different payoffs dealing with Nigeria. It gets very complicated. But one of his own aides has said that this is true. Jefferson says that that aide was just under pressure from the FBI, that he buckled and tried to implicate himself for something that he didn't do. Now, that's something we've heard from some other politicians, not just Democrats who are in the hot seat. But now Jefferson himself, clearly the focus of this particular bribe investigation.
Has he given some alternate explanation as to why there would be $90,000 in tightly wrapped bills secreted in freezer compartments and trash bags all over his house?
No. You know, the first time that he was before the media since this word of this came out this morning was, as I said, in the last 15 minutes. He gave no rationale for why he would have that cash to begin with, much less why he would have thought the best place for it would be in his freezer. He did not give any reasons for that. You can bet he'll get a lot more questions at this news conference coming up in an hour, but hard to say if he'll give any reason for that. It's hard to imagine what his reason could be.
That's fantastic. You know, every time I think the well has run dry, our elected officials find new ways to keep this program going. They never disappoint.
They are here for you.
All right. Lee, you sound like you're a bit under the weather. If you got a sore throat, you sound like you may be a little hoarse.
I am. I've had this kind of this thing, this croup hanging on for about 3 weeks. I joke to people. I like to run. I'm really active, but I've got terrible stamina. I think 100 years ago, I probably would have been dead by now.
on that cheerful note. All right. Thank you, Lisa Goddard. Thank you, Lisa.
You got it.
All right, Lisa Goddard, CNN radio correspondent on the Hill there.
You know,
right.
That congressman could have answered one of those Nigerian emails saying, we will send you money if you put it in the bank.
Deal through. We need access to your bank account. I don't even know what a Nigerian accent sounds like, but anytime the word Nigeria is used in a story, you know, the odds are like 90% that it involves. I mean,
illegal.
Seriously, it's like that. It's like Nigeria and Albania. Like, those are the two places, the whole country's predicated on Ponzi schemes. So there you go. So $90,000 in cash. Here's the thing about Lisa Goddard, right, that when she had that hoarse voice, you know, she sounded like just now. I don't want to make this observation. But with that hoarse voice, she sounded just like, what's her name? Dr. Melfi on The Sopranos. The Lorraine Bracco. Totally the dead ringer for the voice.
She was pretty interested in talking to you about her stamina.
Yeah, but she used the word croup. That's an unpleasant word.
Yeah.
That's where, I didn't think people used that anymore. I thought that was like saying influenza or something. All right. Stamina. Here's Tim Riley. Who's in a peachy and jolly mood at the city desk.
Oh, speaking of influenza and killer diseases, how about deadly Ebola?
How about it?
Well, a woman aboard a Virgin Atlantic airliner threw up and died on the way to reach her destination. Cabin crew and passengers rushed to her aid, but toward the end of the flight, after she began vomiting, her symptoms matched those of a viral fever, Ebola. The results of a post-mortem are awaited. Virgin Atlantic cabin crew came into contact with the woman, are now told to monitor their health because they, too, could be next.
So there you go. There's your upper for the day. The great thing about Ebola, and that's a phrase. Well, no, I'm just saying is that the... Well, never mind. I'm just saying it's not so much the vomiting that you're... It's just sort of a liquefaction. We've got this...
But you get the fever, intense weakness, muscle pain, headache, and sore throat.
Speaking of taking sweaters off when she's hot, this email says, how's Sarah's therapist? Has she ever offered to help take Sarah's sweater off? Woo-hoo. Uh-huh. Signed, sweet, sweet sweater taken off therapy. Wait, when's your next... Is it this week?
No, I don't have it for, like another 2 or 3 weeks.
All right, so we have time to help you prepare for it.
Yeah, like 2.5 weeks.
Because you got, like, what, 3 more sessions?
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like it's our duty, it's the duty of the Rick Emerson audience to help prepare you for your next therapy session.
Oh, thank
you. Want to maximize your therapy dollar. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, a homeless shelter in Juneau, Alaska is looking for donations as long as there's no bear meat involved. The Glory Hole Shelter has... The Glory Hole Shelter has stopped serving donated bear meat after learning the state prohibits nonprofit groups from accepting wild game meat such as bear, fox, and walrus. We didn't even know it was illegal, said Jetta Whitaker, the executive director of the shelter. For years, the Glory Hole accepted bear meat to supplement its meals for the homeless. The meat went into many recipes, including burgers, casseroles, and spaghetti, but last year, Whitaker learned the serving is contrary to rules set by the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation, which is worried about transmitting trichinosis.
Oh, trichinosis.
Oh.
And this is at what shelter?
The Glory Hole Shelter.
And they won't take bear meat?
No, they will not take bear meat.
Will they take monkey meat?
It doesn't say here. This year, we've turned down 5 offers of bear meat at the Glory Hole. There was 250 pounds of ground meat that could have been used in spaghetti sauce, said Bob Thompson, who usually makes the spaghetti at the Glory Hole Shelter. We're protein poor.
Okay. So there you go. Juneau, Alaska. Because there are some recently deceased zoo animals that we read about the other day whose bodies might otherwise go to waste. Some animals.
Macaque.
That they could use at the Glory Hole Shelter.
Macaque.
Meat could be sent up there. Meat from...
Macaque.
Monkeys.
The kind of monkey.
We're playing the definition from Merriam-Webster.com.
It's true.
There you go. Ladies and gentlemen, Tim Riley.
A British poll has revealed the French are the most unfriendly, boring, and ungenerous nation.
All right.
The French agency Press reports that 46% of 6,000 people polled by Traveler's website, Where Are You Now?, said the French are the most unfriendly people on the planet. The Germans came in second.
Who? Why would such a poll even mean? I've never even been there, and I know that. Everyone knows. Certain stereotypes are just true. You know that it is the case.
The U.S. was voted as the most unstylish and having the worst food. Making the best of list.
That's clearly
not
true. What commie group did this poll?
This is the website Where Are You Now?
Okay, and so the French are what? The rudest?
The most unfriendly, boring, and ungenerous nation.
Well, Sarah was nodding her head at that. Everybody I know who's ever been to France has said that it's completely true.
I mean, it's a beautiful place, but I hated it. The people were so rude.
Actually, they specified, they said that it wasn't so much France as it was Paris. They said that, my friend Robin said that if you go to the outlying countryside, the little villages, whatever, the perfect land, you should go to Paris, everybody's an a-hole.
That's the only place I went to in Paris.
It seems wrong to say that the United... You can't judge us according to Kansas. You know what I mean? You can't just go to Iowa and therefore pass judgment on the rest of us being unstylish and being uncivilized barbarians. That seems unfair. Well, whatever. All right. Rick, as a longtime loyal fan of the show, but I believe I am representative of the Rick Emerson audience, I do hereby, on behalf of all the Rick Emerson fans, demand a Rick Emerson webcam focused solely on Sarah. You should be ashamed for not capturing Sarah disrobing in the studio. Shame, Rick, he continues. Shame, shame, shame. Tony the Coup. P.S., F. Scott with a P1 demographic. There you go. That's from some guy.
So as the program director of the station, can I get in trouble for wearing this?
I don't care.
Okay.
So you're the one who has the nudity on the screen every time I come in.
Okay.
Every day. Yeah, I mean, you're only in the studio. I wouldn't be walking around the rest of the building with it.
It would take an hour and a half and about a dozen passwords to find the correct form to reprimand you.
Yes. So seriously.
Consider it okay.
All right. It's 503-733-2970. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, Madonna launched her first world tour in two whole years yesterday, delighting the enthusiastic L.A. crowd by hanging herself from a cross, insulting the president, and dusting off some of the sexy moves that have sustained her career for more than 20 years. This is the Confessions Tour that'll keep her on the road for 2 months in North America, then resume June 30th in Wales, where a five-week stadium swing through eight European cities. Shows in Japan are also on tap for mid-September. This 47-year-old dance diva spent 2 hours churning out most of her tunes from her new album, Confessions on the Dance Floor, as well as a few old ones, such as Like a Virgin, Ray of Light, and Lucky Star. The audience at the L.A. Forum included Madonna's Kabbalah guru, the Rabbi Huhuhu Berg, socialite Nicole Richie, and gay icon Rosie O'Donnell, who have created herself to a premium seat on the floor and left your spouse alone in the stands.
Who?
Rosie O'Donnell.
Okay. All right. Well, whatever. All right. So there you go. So I did see some of the opening shots of that. They were on the Drudge Report, of course. But there was that picture. She's on like a huge like mirror ball crucifix. Mm-hmm. It's not a mirror ball, but I mean it's a crucifix made out of this cool like disco-y material. Yeah, I mean you got to give it to Madonna. She's like 47 and still just giving a big finger in the eye to everybody. So that's good. So and so forth. Should I be answering these or?
Sure, why not? It's a talk show.
Why not? Let's go for it. Let's see. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Who's this?
Hi, this is Terry from Taggart. How are you, Rick?
Hi, Terry. How are you?
Hey, Friday, I was so looking forward to the double penis watch, and you guys didn't do it.
Did we not? Did I promise a double penis watch that we did not deliver?
You did not do it.
We always promise things we don't deliver.
Come on.
Oh, you're all
come
shocked.
On,
I am horrified. Dear advertiser, I will never sponsor the Rick Emerson Show. I was promised a feature that then did not materialize during the broadcast.
Yeah, come on.
I'm shocked
today.
At Paul.
Today.
Yeah, all right.
I was so looking forward to it.
Well, part of it, part of it is unpleasant, though.
Well, unpleasant for you or for us listeners?
Well, I guess it remains to be seen. Well, we'll get to it today. All right, there you go. That's Terry.
Thank you.
All right, that's et cetera. All right, it's 503-733-2970. By the way, coming up later on, Clyde Lewis will be in the studio with us today. What else,
we
Peter?
We still have that beer, too, if didn't pick it up yet.
That Brian the car driver guy mm-hmm. dropped off. Peter Carlin will be in the studio, or not in the studio. He'll be on the phone talking about The Sopranos. We've got Ed McCarthy coming up. Top five, et cetera. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, so much for that apology. The Dixie Chicks singer Natalie Maines offered to the president in 2003 after criticizing him at a London concert. She says she's taking it all back. She told Time magazine she no longer feels sorry about her comment. She says she doesn't feel the president is owed any respect whatsoever. The trouble started when Maines told a London audience that the group was ashamed of the president because he was from Texas. The remarks led to death threats and a backlash from other country stars, including member Toby Keith.
I am. Yeah.
He should be drafted and sent to the front line.
That new Dixie Chicks album is getting fantastic reviews, but I haven't heard it. But it's getting really good reviews. So I like those guys. I mean, everybody pokes fun at the Dixie Chicks, but they're. I have no problem with them. I have no difficulties with them whatsoever. Rick, now listen to this. So, Rick, subject line, is Sarah in her bra or what? Will you be putting a photo? What kind of a company do you think we work at?
Look, I know. Because you were saying it.
Whoa, hello.
Sorry, that was my water bottle. I got a little flustered. No, because the way you're wording it makes me sound like I'm taking my sweater off with my T-shirt underneath
no,
that
no,
says
no.
something inappropriate.
I mentioned that your T-shirt was still on because you asked if it was appropriate to walk around in your T-shirt. Look, we may be a little lax about certain things. There may be alcohol present throughout this company at all times, day and night. Third Friday in a row, I was walking by, I forgot to mention this, last week, about 1:30, I walk into the kitchen to get to get myself some half and half for my coffee. Right there, big bottle of Jack Daniels, right on the kitchen counter, right by the toaster. It was like the toaster, and there was a huge thing of Jack Daniels, like the big fifth, and then there was a big thing of margarita mix.
It's probably left over from like a couple listener party or something.
Maybe. I didn't say that. I mean, so we are perhaps a little more relaxed about some things here than perhaps a traditional workplace or the place of employment where you spend your days. But that doesn't mean that Sarah Dillon is going to be walking around doing the show in a brassiere. So just let's move on. Let's move off of that as it is. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, it was a 1-2 encounter between Axl Rose and Tommy Hilfiger. The rocker and designer capped a Thursday night out with apparently some kind of fist fight at a new club called The Plum in Manhattan's Chelsea neighborhood with midnight fisticuffs. There was an issue between them, said Plum owner Noel Ashman. The scuffle reportedly started after Guns N' Roses frontman moved the drink of Hilfiger's girlfriend, whose name is Dee. He moved his girlfriend's drink so it wouldn't spill, Rose told the L.A. radio station K-Rock on Friday. It's the most surreal thing I think that's ever happened to me in my life. According to the 44-year-old singer Hilfiger, who's 55 now, smacked him in the arm and told him to put that drink back. He just kept smacking me, said Rose. Attempts to reach Hilfiger or representative not immediately successful.
It's not even so much embarrassing as it is just stupid. The idea that there's a slap fight. I mean, it just sounds retarded even to say it. There's a slap fight between Axl Rose and Tommy Hilfiger. It's just absurd even to be talking about. But this is how you know, by the way, there's been all this discussion about Chinese democracy, this long-delayed, I mean, to say long-delayed really doesn't even do it justice, this decade-plus delayed new album from the alleged Guns N' Roses group. The idea that this is going to come out, though, is given credence by all of these Axl Rose stories because clearly this stuff all goes, these are all statements from him, and this stuff all goes through him or his publisher. So the fact that there's been a bunch of stories from Axl Rose where he himself is talking to the press, because this is like the third or fourth one inside of a month or two, indicates that record probably is coming out at some point in the near future. By the way, speaking of geek stuff, we should tell you we have a new feature coming up later on today. We'll be playing the Rick Emerson Week in Geek. That'll be coming up. What else? I don't have time to mention it all here, but we are now, what, about 2 weeks away, 3 weeks away from June 6th, from 6606, which, as everybody's pointed out, I think only comes once a millennium. So I guess it only does, is that once?
Twice?
Three times the latest?
Stop. Listen to that. That's comedic timing right there. Anyway, so everybody has been asking what we're going to do for it, and we're going to pursue something for it. We'll talk about that coming up in the next hour. Clyde Lewis will be here, and we'll talk about our plans for the 666 date, which is coming up in a couple weeks. Here's Tim Riley at the City Desk.
Leonard Skinner frontman Johnny Van Zant is recovering from an emergency appendectomy. His condition is forcing him to skip the 41st Annual Academy of Country Music Awards. The Southern rocker is expected to participate in the event with his brother Donnie. The pair under the name Van Zant are among the nominees for top vocal duo. The singer suffered a severe bout with appendicitis last week.
According to Mark here, the people at Channel 8 referred to the Trojan implosion as being, quote, a real blast to watch. There you go. By the way, in case you're wondering why you should avoid Channel 8 News tonight, they apparently are talking about, and I swear to God, guard llamas. Not guard dogs, guard llamas. With the appropriate, and the worst part is, like, I'm sitting there listening to the commercial, and the guys happen to sound all serious about it. Like, should you be? He literally says this. I'm in the bathroom earlier, and they're playing the whatever, and there's an ad for for Channel 8 News, and he's like, should you be having a llama guard your possessions? Like, imagine being some guy. You've got a broadcasting degree, and you're there in the voiceover booth having to record something about guard llamas. How could you go to work every day? At least we know that we're absurd. At least we are under no illusions. That we have our news here, it's not even real. It's just taken, as we found out, it's like taken straight out of Pravda.
We just add it to the stack. we read anything put in front of us.
It's just reported mindlessly with no thought towards accuracy or content or whatever. But
you could be drinking toilet water. I think that was the last week's week thing, wasn't it?
Murrow would be proud. Here's Tim Riley.
Let's do a geek watch.
Here's your geek watch.
High-speed modem is intolerably slow.
In the Quasar Dilemma, remember you used to...
It's just a television show. That's all, okay?
Right, but... Because we were wondering if the quantum flux... Now, just listen on
there. There is no quantum flux. There's no auxiliary. There's no goddamn ship. You got it?
Energize.
Move over to Tyrannosaurus Rex. Here comes the Dracorix Hogwarsia, he says effortlessly. With a dream light from scientists and Harry Potter author J.K. Rowling, the Children's Museum 66-million-year-old dinosaur skull and dragon-like features has finally gotten its own name.
Do you have any idea what you're reading?
Absolutely not. That, okay. It doesn't matter.
It'll all be forgotten by tomorrow anyway.
The museum will celebrate the naming of the recently discovered dinosaur species today with an unveiling of the artifact, which museum officials have spent the past 2 years cleaning and reassembling. Rowling cited her children's love of dinosaurs in endorsing the name. Quote, she says, "The naming is easily the most unexpected honor to come my way since the publication of Harry Potter books," unquote. The dinosaur's skull mixes spiky horns, bumps, and a long muzzle. But unlike other patches that have domed foreheads, this one is...
What the hell are you talking about?
I'm talking about the situation in Iraq. and to ignore the polls. Because Donald Rumsfeld says this is just a passing fancy.
Let me just... Okay, here's the bottom line for you. There's a dinosaur in Britain. They just found it. They let kids name it. The dinosaur is going to be called Dracorex Hogwartsia.
And why wouldn't it?
There you go. There's your Geek Watch for
by Graftar's hammer, by the sons of Warvan, I shall avenge you.
Next. Ooh, loneliness and cheeseburgers are dangerous.
What
was that?
Okay, here's... No, you...
It doesn't matter.
No. Did not you, the news. No.
Did you see that girl outside?
Okay, here's what just happened. So Tim was just reading the news, and Tim was attempting to muscle his way through this dinosaur story.
Which I did.
Which you did, admirably, and with gusto. Uh-huh. And so while that was happening, see, here's the thing about this program. We do this program inside what some people might call a radio studio. And on the outside of the studio, there is a huge red glowing light that says, "On Air." Now, if I was just to go out and grab somebody, like, off the street and ask them what that light meant, everybody would know. 10 out of 10 people from New Zealand, people from the goddamn moon would understand what that light means. When the light is on and says on air, do you A, walk into the studio, knock on the door, do everything you can to distract the people who are creating radio genius inside? Or B, do you say to yourself, you know what, maybe I'll come back later. Maybe I'll send them an email. Maybe I'll message Sarah on this revolutionary new device we've got called a telephone, which is right over there. So everybody in this building, for some reason, picks option A. And so we're trying to do the news, trying to do whatever, and people either stand outside the door and they look inside as though we were gibbons at the zoo, or they just open the door and walk on in. Always with the same explanation that, I'm sorry, I didn't see the on-air light. The on-air light is like a foot high and a foot across and glows bright red 2 inches from the door. Not only that, the girl who came in was wearing green leotards and wings.
Why was she dressed as a fairy?
I don't know. So
we shouldn't have closed out the Geek Watch before we started talking
seriously.
About this.
So, I mean, just add this to the list of reasons.
Was it a FedEx delivery by any chance?
I don't know. We've started doing this ad hoc segment every day called Ways in Which CBS Radio is Different from the Place Where You Work. I don't know if, like, at your business, you just got girls walking around in skin-tight green outfits with wings clipped to the back. Maybe that's what happens when you abuse the bottle of Jack Daniels in the kitchen too early in the morning. I don't know.
Maybe she was selling Girl Scout cookies.
So I think she was telling us that Clyde is here, but I don't really know.
Oh.
So there you go.
She didn't even address the fact that she was
I was right here. I opened the door while Tim was attempting to read this poor Tim was trying to read this dinosaur story. I opened the door. I'm talking to the girl, and she leans in, and she says, "Hi, I think you've got a guest in the lobby." And it's like she's standing there in the sparkly green outfit wearing a huge pair of wings. I don't mean wings like a feminine hygiene, but I mean wings. Like she was going to be buzzing around near some sort of bright glowing light up at the ceiling later.
Or isn't Peter Pan playing downtown somewhere?
Maybe. You can't just go to your office wearing wings.
I guess you can here.
It doesn't make any sense. All right.
Let's reset. You want to take a break?
Is that the end of the Geek Watch? Are we done?
We already
finished it. Yeah.
All right. Are we going to break here?
Yeah, we might as well.
Yeah.
Is it hot in here?
Let's regroup.
Is it hot where you are?
Okay. Good times. All right. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. Clyde Lewis is going to be here next hour. CNN radio correspondent Ed McCarthy to talk about the search for Jimmy Hoffa's bones. Also, the Da Vinci Code. Peter Carlin going to be here later to talk about The Sopranos, which Sarah missed last night. And it all went badly last night. It all went south, and you missed it. Top five songs from May 18th, 1980. We'll talk about Trojan Implosion, and we'll do some awful news. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970, Solid State Radio.